This is the Day Zero Update for July 9th, 2017. I'm Filippo Adolfo.
I'm Brandon Parkins.
I'm Dan Red Victorio.
And I'm Teresa Sammons.
Yeah, this has been kind of a slow week.
Extremely.
Yeah, it seems like everybody has lost their steam since E3, and it's now just trickling out release dates and the occasional developer acting annoying type story, which I don't really feel like covering, so we won't. That's basically what's right. That kind of boiled down to.
Yeah, it's not news. So
yeah, there are horrible developers, just like there are horrible people. This shouldn't surprise anybody at this point. So yeah. But yeah, I'm kind of wondering, have any of you guys watched the Netflix Castlevania series?
I finished it. It's fantastic. My God.
You, Brandon?
I have not had the chance yet, but God, do I want to.
Oh, yeah.
My Facebook news feed is blowing up with people who have been watching it. Because it's only, what, like 2 hours tops?
Yeah, it's four episodes, about 25 minutes each. So, you know, it's not a huge time commitment, but it is totally worth it.
It's happening this week.
Yeah, it's like... drunken Trevor Belmont. That's a thing that happens in this series. And then the voice of that bishop, that freaky zealot of a bishop, was very, very familiar. It's Matt Frewer.
Really? Yeah.
Max Headroom is the bishop. Of course, because he's not a named character, you automatically know what's going to happen to him. So that shouldn't come as any surprise to anybody. But it's a really good series. If this is the kind of animation that Netflix is going to be able to do with these video game properties, I'm optimistic for the Assassin's Creed one that was announced recently. So. This is really good stuff. Definitely not for the kids.
No.
Unless you want to traumatize your children, then by all means, go right ahead.
Castlevania gives no fucks at all. The animation is pretty much on par with the Avatar series, so Legend of Korra, Last Airbender, that kind of thing, except there is so much swearing, there's people's eyes being whipped off, there's people's fingers being whipped off. Oh my God, it's great.
Yeah. And there is a lot of, I would say anti-religious sentiment, but it's more like kind of illustrating the way the church was at the time. Remember, I think it's 1472 where this is taking place. Mm-hmm. So, the church wasn't exactly nice at that time.
Nope.
So, it's a good series. If you have Netflix and you like stuff that's based on video games that doesn't suck, check this out.
Yeah. I mean, take it for what it is. My main complaint, which I don't... You can argue whether or not it's valid, is it doesn't really have any of the sound effects that I've grown to love with the series. And that's, to me... That removes some of the authenticity, but aside from that, you know, I'm glad that Dracula actually has a story. We're seeing Trevor Belmont in action. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah. Trevor Belmont is in action. What else happens in there? Well, you end up meeting three of the characters from Castlevania 3 that you know of. So, of course. Alucard is one of them. That's not a spoiler. That's right in the first part of the episode, so that's no spoiler there. But good series. Watch it. It's great. Apart from that, I've been playing my usual stuff, you know, Diablo 3, Tekken 7, and I played, during the Steam sale, I bought Space Plan, which is one of those idle / clicker games, which I managed to finish. I'm kind of obsessed with those right now because I'm actually thinking of making one.
Yeah.
Just as a programming type project, so I could do it. So I'm just kind of using all of these ones as research to see like what people do and the kind of mechanics that some of them employ, and it's been eye opening. This one here is one of the ones that you can actually finish, and I have done so. So yes, it wasn't bad. It's also really funny. So also potatoes play a big part in this game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No potato box.
Well, potato planets. Yeah, everything in this game is based on potatoes because it's the only thing that your replicator system could make because everything else broke. So, yeah, so you have to basically build everything out of potatoes. And somehow it works. But anyways, yeah, that's been kind of my week, but how about you, Brandon?
Yeah, so right now, after having finished Valkyria Revolution, which, by the way, I'm about halfway through on the review for that one.
Okay.
Just in case anybody's curious. Should be cool. Out, if not tonight, then tomorrow. Once I got done with that, I decided to play something that I could, that actually had satisfying gameplay, and that is Fire Emblem Echoes. Shadows of Valentia, and yeah, it is very good. Really is. It's a lot of fun. I mean, we're pretty much, we've all played Fire Emblem before, right?
Of course.
Yeah, of course.
It's been a while, but yeah, a few years.
Basically, Fire Emblem Echoes is basically the remake of Fire Emblem Gaiden, which is the second Fire Emblem game. But they add some, you know, some additional things, like, you know, they had completely updated the graphics, upgraded all the character designs, have a fully voiced cast. Every person, every character, unless, with the exception of, like, just some random townspeople, every character is fully voiced. And furthermore, they've also added some things. Like, one of the things they added is the dungeon crawling segment, which is basically what happens is every so often you'll come across, like, temples or just old dungeons or whatever, and you have to go down and explore them. And basically what you do is you go in, and it's actually a lot like the combat in Persona 4, in that you go in there, you basically break a bunch of stuff. If you come across an enemy, you can strike them, and then once that happens, you'll go into a normal Fire Emblem type battle where you just, and then after that's done, you go on and, rinse and repeat. And it's actually really satisfying, I won't lie. And of course, because it's Fire Emblem, it's got a great epic story with it. So it's good. Really good. And to supplement that, I've also been getting back into Mass Effect Andromeda. Those of you who don't know, they've pretty much fixed all of the animation and graphical problems from its debut, and it's actually pretty good now. So
yeah. They also, like, I don't know if they did it on the PS4 and Xbox One, but they also dropped the DRM, which actually made the game run better. So
yeah,
that's a thing.
Yeah, so if you've actually been feeling like you don't know if you want to play Mass Effect Andromeda or not, actually you should get it now because they've pretty much fixed all of the problems it had with its debut. So
if they had just delayed it 6 months, they wouldn't have had those problems to begin with.
Yeah. That's what happens when you hand off your major franchise to the B team.
Yeah, well.
But yeah, that's what I've been up to. So what about you, Dan Reb?
Yeah, I'm still playing some Crash here and there. Compared to last week, I've made probably no progress at all. It's still a bitch to play, but it's still fun at that.
A lot of people have actually pointed this out. The PS4 version is harder than the original.
Oh! Fantastic. Cool. It's funny, after you die, they give you, a pro tip at the bottom. I was like, oh, yeah, if you want to play in classic mode, just switch your thumb to the control pad rather than the sticks. I'm like, yeah.
Okay, no, okay, don't cool. want to do that.
Whatever. And then, honestly, dying so much, it doesn't bother me. It's the loading screens to get back into it.
Pretty bad.
Like, oh my god, it's horrible. Like it takes a while to load the game, and then you got to load the level, and then you get a game over, and you got to reload the level. I'm like, fuck. Hmm. So yeah, to alleviate on that, I also downloaded Knack for like $6 on PSN, which I had my eye on for the longest time, and this game is good. I don't see why people have been like complaining about it or making fun of it or making memes of it. Like, it's a good game, so I don't see what the problem is. It's also pretty challenging at times when you want it to be. There is a distinct barrier between like the normal mode, the easy mode, and the hard mode, and I'm really enjoying it so far. And like when you die, like there isn't that much of a loading screen. So yeah, this is a launch game, so that's pretty cool. But aside from that, it's primarily been casual. I'm gearing up for D23, which is this coming weekend. So I'll be going on Saturday and Sunday. And Saturday is a big gaming day. So one of the Disney panels is all about the games coming out of their studios. So we're for sure going to get a new trailer for Kingdom Hearts 3.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be huge. It's going to break the internet. But I doubt we'll see a date, and if we see a date, it'll be not followed through. So let's not get ahead of ourselves there. they'll probably go over Battlefront 2, because Star Wars is going to be huge at D23, especially since they've already said they won't be going to Comic-Con. So yeah, looking forward to that. And then we have San Diego Comic-Con the following week. And there is a whole lot more gaming there than in previous years. Like, every single day has quite a few gaming panels. And Nintendo is going to have a huge presence in one of the hotels nearby. So I'm going to see if they have anything new. Probably play Mario Odyssey again. I don't know. We'll see. And, looking fun. It's really hot, though.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
San Diego in the summer. Have fun with that.
Yep. How about you, Teresa?
I've been working on the main storyline in Final Fantasy XIV still. Getting sidetracked with crafting still. That's all right. It's a good way to earn some gil in games. So, been playing Pokemon Go still, even though it's been hot. Oh my god, it's been so hot. Kind of laid off on the raids this week, though, because it was just, 3 o'clock in the afternoon in the blazing sun was a little bit too much. So I went all casual and played entirely too much of Plants vs. Zombies Game of the Year Edition. Also some Ninja Pizza Girl, which I need to find out if that has controller support, because I'm not a great keyboard gamer. I don't prefer it. I prefer controllers. But I picked up some more stuff on the Steam sale to play Ninja Pizza Girls. It's an okay little diversion. It's worth a couple of bucks. But apparently I had been jonesing for Plants vs. Zombies, even though I didn't realize it. So
Teresa, I have a question. Like, other than that asshole who keeps fucking up your raids, Has there been like slightly more activity in your area with Pokemon Go as of late?
Oh god!
Like
yeah.
For me, like all of my Pokemon Go Facebook groups are alive and well again. Obviously, we're not seeing our crowds anymore, but it looks like there's a lot of activity with the game now, and it's actually reached the top 5 engrossing again. So that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, there has been. When it was a little bit cooler a week before, I went out during raids and hit up my local park. And we had, 16 people there.
Nice.
And I don't even know if I've ever seen that many people in the park in the past 3 months, So people literally came out of the weeds, just appeared out of the weeds. And we're like, you here for the raid? Yeah. So that was great. But our gyms have been changing hands constantly. The only reason I haven't been kicked out of the gym that I took over right before I came home for the podcast is because there's a raid starting, so it's got the countdown timer, so nobody can battle it.
Yeah.
Which I didn't realize there was going to be a raid there, but that worked out in my favor, so I could stay in the gym for a couple of hours and get some more coins. But yeah, it has been pretty active. We went downtown Thursday night, and it was hot, so we were only doing a driving thing. I know that sounds horrible. We should have been out walking, but it was so hot. And there were a lot of people. We could see them with Pokemon Go up on their screens while they were walking, and we were, you know, going through and getting the gym spins because we had in the Pokestops because we had run out of everything. Like, we were almost completely dry, so so we had been playing apparently a little too much. But yeah, it's and then I stayed in the Harold Washington Park for probably 3 days before somebody finally threw me out, which I thought was an incredible amount of time to stay in a gym downtown because it's, you know, it's a happening place.
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It seems like they finally fixed the spoofing problem, so.
They did, although I was really concerned when I saw Shifty Pants back. I was screaming. I was screaming because that mofo, whoever he is, I was convinced he was a spoofer. And maybe he is. Maybe he figured it out one more time, but maybe he was just a local Joe who happened to get in on all of it while freaking Valor was spoofing all over the place. Yeah. But yeah, it does seem like everybody is legit playing and they're in person. And other than a few signs saying flower shop parking only, you know, people getting mad about loiterers playing Pokemon Go. Everything seems to be going pretty well.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Hmm. All right. So let's get on to the show itself then. So this first one is just kind of cool. If I don't know if you follow Ed's Junk on YouTube, but he does console mods and stuff. Kind of like Benton Heck, but he often sells some of this stuff. I won't be selling this one, but he made what he calls the X Station, which is a PS4 Slim and an Xbox One S jammed into one console.
Wow.
Yeah, it's, look at this thing. I mean, it is, well, fugly.
Yeah.
let's be honest. it's fugly, but yeah, it's got basically two disk drives. It's got some funky flashing LED effects when you power it on, and the LEDs show off which console is active at the moment, because you can't run them both at the same time, or it would probably melt.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a cool little thing. Kind of surprised nobody's, like, come around to think of this sooner, but I guess they kind of needed the smaller, shrunken down versions to be able to do it. And, yeah, he managed to cram it together into something that looks more or less like an original Xbox One.
Yeah.
No, like, this is really awesome. Like, this is that stuff that, you know, when you're 8 or 9 years old in the playground, you're just making up these bullshit stories, and this is one of them, and this looks cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of a process to get this thing going. It's got basically two power supplies. You have to run the, first of all, you turn it on so you get the fans going, and it's super loud. So not exactly practical, but definitely cool. Yeah, I just wanted to share that because it's pretty freaking cool looking, and maybe, you know, he'll refine this and make it into something that you could actually sell, and some people would enjoy it. I know having two consoles with one HDMI output wouldn't be a bad idea, so yeah, it's cool stuff. So moving on, we have more Xbox news. There was a little Twitter discussion going on between a Twitter user and Mike Ibarra, and I was asking whether or not we would be getting gifting on the Xbox platform, and Mike said, yeah, that's not far off, which is good, because none of the consoles have this yet.
No.
Yep. I really need it. I mean, Microsoft just added refunds recently, making them the only console maker that does this. So, yeah, they bring in gifting, and they're pretty much on par with Steam.
And, yeah.
Yeah, that's a pretty good place to be.
I think that could be interesting for people who, you know, especially, like, I was reading something. I saw a picture of some guy's girlfriend's dad and his two brothers who get together on Xbox Live every Friday night, and they play together, you know, just like they did when they were kids. And they had gotten together in person and were playing. And, you know, for people who are really involved with their teams and stuff, I think that would be a great thing. I mean, everybody likes giving stuff at Christmas, right?
Right, exactly.
You know?
Yeah. Hey, welcome aboard, Pat. Nice for you to make it.
Hey!
Yeah, something sort of commanded my attention there, and...
No, that's all good. Right. Yeah, we were just talking about gifting on the Xbox One, which, I'm glad it's coming along, so...
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a little more personal. It's a good feature. Yeah, it's a little more personal than just, you know, getting a game card.
Yeah.
You know... And everybody could do that, but picking out a game for someone, it's nice.
Yeah, it's nice. Plus, you know, if you've got kid accounts, you can, you know, gift games to them and, you know, do that.
Yeah.
Instead of having to have them on your own primary console, which, okay, if you've got multiple Xbox Ones, that's a big plus. Because you don't
have enough money to gift shit to your kids.
Well, they have birthdays, they have Christmas, you know, they want games.
Yeah, they do.
So what else have we got going on here? Oh, yeah, the freebie alert here. If you've got Steam, you might want to check this out. It's a game called 1982. You can download this for free there, and it's basically a... just a love letter to 80s retro arcades and basically pop culture. It's basically a Space Invaders clone. It gets kind of weird. And lots of different enemies showing up from different games. And it's just a mashup that's just brilliant. Download this and play it. It is so fun. Yes. 1982, and it doesn't require a whole hell of a lot of system requirements, so pretty much everybody should be able to play it. It's a good little freebie that...
Oh my gosh, some of this looks like Astro Blast.
Yeah, there's some of that in there. There's like the aliens from Defender, they'll come down and try to get you. There's a lot of fun. The asteroids, they'll like break apart into more asteroids, and it's just so fun. Yeah. So check that out. More upcoming news, this time for the PlayStation 4. We talked about this a little bit briefly before the show, but Hidden Dragon Legend. This is a game from Chinese developer Megafun Games. It's going to be published
by... And when we say China, we mean the People's Republic of China, mainland.
Yeah, the actual China. It's a 2.5D action platformer. I got a little bit of a Rygar vibe from it a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, looks really good. It's set in Imperial China.
Yeah, it's a Wuxia type thing.
Yeah. But I think this is probably going to be one to watch. Not sure. Yeah, I know you guys watched the trailer and it's like, this might be a hidden gem here.
Mm-hmm.
So check this out, and it's a hell of a lot better than some of the stuff that's been showing up on PSN lately.
Yeah.
But this is coming out in August. It's going to be $20, and I'm going to buy it because it looks really awesome.
Oh yeah. But those of you who are wondering what Wuxia is, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, House of Flying Daggers. That's what you're thinking of.
Yeah.
Okay.
That type of thing.
Yeah.
Where it's like, you know, it takes place someplace in China's past, but there's a lot of martial arts and sword play and magic and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Holy shit, look at this boss. Yeah, I'm buying this.
Isn't he cool?
Yeah. This is so awesome looking. Yeah, definitely one we're going to be probably all picking up. And Tears of Teresa doesn't even have PS4 yet, so...
I know. I'll just have to go over to a friend's house, borrow it from the library, and say, hey... Give me your couch for an hour.
I can't wait to see the game over screen.
Yeah. So, yeah. Other PS4 release news. July 19th, if you've been waiting for Superhot and Superhot VR to show up, they're coming out on PS4 and PSVR. So, yeah. Superhot is one of those really, really just stylish first-person shooters that you don't see very often.
It shows that there's still room for creativity in the genre.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That it hasn't all been done.
No, it hasn't all been done. I love the mechanic where if you don't move, nothing else does.
Yeah.
And yeah, you have to, and like some of your skills don't count as movement, even though you do move. It's really, really cool. I've been waiting for a console port to be able to play this, so I'm going to download that when it arrives. Yeah, good stuff.
Yeah, I played it in VR for a little bit at at E3, and yeah, I was impressed by it. I didn't know about the whole, you know, if you're not doing anything, no one else does mechanic, so yeah. That was pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, so. In other things, yeah, we know about PSX. It's usually in December over here. Mm-hmm. But Sony is expanding it now. It's going to Southeast Asia on August 5th. It's a one-day event.
That's fairly short notice.
Where is Southeast Asia? It's Malaysia.
Yeah. Oh,
interesting. Yeah. Well, I think Kuala Lumpur. Yeah. So let's go in there. August 5th. Most of the games that we saw at E3 are going to be there. You know, you're going to have Detroit Become Human, the Horizon expansion, all the stuff basically we saw at E3. I would imagine Spider-Man there as well. They're also going to have developer and PR sessions as well for people who want to make appointments and stuff like that. It's basically going to be modeled after the North American PSX, just condensed down to one day.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Just not really a whole heck of a lot to say there. It's just, you know, Sony's expanding this. They seem to be committed to owning their own shows. Makes me wonder if they intend to just, you know, back out or hold off on all of their announcements on the shows that are coming, because we do have Gamescom and PGE coming soon. So,
yep.
Yeah. So. Yeah, keep an eye on that. I would expect to see probably more Asia-centric announcements from there. And those are usually of particular interest to us, because it usually means JRPG announcements.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you want to keep an eye on that one.
For sure.
Yeah. So.
I don't want to sound too cynical, but it's almost getting to the point where they might as well not show up at E3 at all.
Yeah, well, technically, if it wasn't for their floor presence, which was actually pretty substantial, they may as well have. Because their press event left a lot to be desired, and I don't think anybody disagrees on that.
Yeah.
It's like, if I were at the Shrine Auditorium there where they had their press event, I would have been pissed.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was an hour that I had to make my way over there for 1 hour of what basically amounted to them just showing a bunch of trailers.
Hmm.
You know, that would have been an hour that I could have done something else.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Yeah. Good.
But there was a flute performance.
And that, as I was saying, that would have been an hour that I could have done something else. Anyways, in other news, we got a Shadow of Mordor update, which probably coincides with the game's recent inclusion in the mid-year sale.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guessing they want people to be ready for Shadow of War when that comes out, because this update allows people to export their saves and they're basically their nemesis status, so they start off in the second game with basically an army. Yeah, this looks very cool. I always like to see, you know, progress, you know, continuity from one game to another. That's usually a good thing, because most sequels don't do that. But Destiny's going to be doing some of that. Now this one here is going to as well. Yeah, it's good to see. You know, I got to actually get somewhere in the game, which turns out to be really, really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely need to spend more time in there. Okay, so I guess because it's a slow week, we're going to talk, hopefully,
well, actually,
length.
We got one thing before we got to talk about. Yes.
I missed this. Sorry about that, Pat. Yes, we have Street Fighter V news.
Yep. So this supports a rumor that had already been going around. There was a post on, I believe, Reddit that basically laid out the entire plan for the remainder of Season 2. And this was before Ed was actually released, and Ed was part of this as well. But that also established that the next character up would be Abigail from Final Fight.
Mm-hmm.
And based on a Capcom official site, gaffe of sorts, setting up an official page, even though leaving it blank, the information is kind of there.
Yeah.
Mm. That's the case.
Hmm.
Can I just say that, oh my God, Capcom, fire your freaking web team. This is why you do that shit on your staging server and you don't push it out to your live server. Holy crap. Somebody's getting fired.
This is what the draft status on posts is for, folks.
Yeah.
You don't. God. But it's an easy mistake to make. But still,
Season one got revealed more or less by data miners, and now we got this.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Well, wait. You think maybe it was intentional? Maybe they knew people were going to go looking.
I don't think so. People will look whether they, mm-hmm. one way or the other. But, yeah, Abigail is going to be a very, very intriguing character. I can't wait to see what they actually do with him.
Basically 8 feet of fuck you.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you've ever fought against him in Final Fight, he basically turns red and murders you.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, if you look at his outfit and everything, it's really obvious that whoever designed him is a big fan of King Diamond.
Yeah. Makes me wonder, I think he would be the tallest character in the game, which poses
at 8
some,
feet, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which poses some very interesting...
Basically going to mean he's going to fill up half the screen.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
You know, he could be a big target, but...
There's no question what his V-trigger is going to be.
Mm-hmm. Turn red and murder you.
Yeah. Charged to unblockable. Oh, sure. I'm sure that's all planned. So.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. It's going to make for a great trailer, though.
Oh, yeah. It'll be fantastic. Hopefully there's a really good remix from Final Fight that hasn't already been remixed to death.
Yeah.
You know, there are some really good tunes from that game that Capcom hasn't really gotten to in Street Fighter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'd really like to see them, bring back more of the Final Fight characters.
Oh, yeah. I feel like it was a missed opportunity that Sodom never showed up in Street Fighter 4 because that system would have been really good to him.
Yeah.
Just imagining what his offense could have been like with focus cancels is kind of terrifying.
Yeah. But, I think he probably would have broken that game.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Or at the very least been very top tier.
Yeah.
You know... Mix things up with his command grab. Fantastic.
Yeah.
But no, I'm really looking forward to seeing this. I'm guessing that we're going to get the character trailer at Evo.
Yeah.
Mm. That only makes sense at this point. So it's understandable why they're getting the website ready.
Yeah. So cool. Do we know, according to this leak, what else is coming? Or who else?
The next character is Minot, who's the fortune teller from Ed's story mode.
Okay. Mm.
And I can't remember who the final one was.
Hmm.
But I can probably pull it up here.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm curious.
Mm. Oh, Zeku is the other one.
Okay.
Zeku might be the next one instead of Minot. Zeku is the Bushinryu master.
Hmm.
So basically the guy who is in charge of the ninja in the...
Yeah.
Guy, Maki. Yeah. So kind of a Final Fight character, but never really showed up.
Yeah. But he might have... you might have shades of those characters in there since he taught them, so.
Pretty easy to guess what the V skill would be, not so much the V trigger.
Hmm.
Probably would be a lot of fun to play.
Yeah.
And something that we don't really quite have in Street Fighter V yet, so. No. And then who knows what Minot is going to be like, so.
Yeah. Well, one thing I'll say about Capcom is all of their characters have been very diverse.
Yes.
I love the way this game plays just because of the just the variety of styles that are represented in the game. Pretty much, if there's a particular style of fighting you like, there's probably a Street Fighter V character that will suit you.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And if not, there's one coming sooner than later.
Yeah. So. Alrighty. So let's move on to our big discussion topic of the week, and that is basically mid-generation reflections.
Yes.
We're here. It's 4 years-ish into the 8th generation of consoles. And it's time to look back and see, what's happened and where we're going. So first thing I wanted to kind of touch on is how this generation got started. And that's basically the fight between Microsoft and Sony as far as PR went. How in 2013, how Microsoft was just, the Xbox 360 was doing well, and then they were so convinced that the Xbox One would be the shit that they got a little bit too hubristic with their approach to it, kind of forgetting what Xbox was supposed to be about.
Let's just say it like it is. They gift-wrapped the generation for Sony.
Yeah, they kind of did.
I mean, we're going to talk about something else here in a second that detracts from that, but there's no way that they're closing that gap. That's just not going to happen. And it's all because of the terrible first impression that the Xbox One made. And it's interesting to think what could have been if Don Matrick hadn't been there to hamstring them out of the gate.
Yeah. So, I mean, I still know people who like ask me if what console to get, and if I say Xbox One, it's like, well, doesn't that come with the Kinect? And doesn't it look spy on you all the time? I still get that.
Oh my god!
Even though the Kinect isn't included anymore, which I have to tell them that. But yeah, it's got a bad reputation because of that, and it's. Someone like me who can basically convince, someone, one or two people that, yeah, it's okay. But that's a big uphill battle for Microsoft to have to face,
Oh, yeah.
The Xbox One
is a defined quantity in a lot of people's minds and not necessarily in an accurate way.
Yeah. And that basically handed it to Sony. Sony did everything right at the beginning of the generation.
Yeah.
They took the ball, ran with it as far as their marketing went. The sales backed that up. They're basically, 2-1 to the Xbox One at this point.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Which brings me to where Sony is right now. Because they're number one, it seems like they're going back to the old Sony. The Ken Kutaragi era, we can do no wrong and you will like it era.
Mm-hmm.
Well, fortunately, the problem only seems to be one guy, so once they root him out...
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully.
It's more than that, because you're starting to see this kind of thing showing up. Or maybe a laissez-faire attitude would be more appropriate to what I'm talking about here to the PlayStation Store.
Like they aren't the active, utter pricks that they were in 2004, 2005.
Yeah.
This is a different form of bastardness.
Different form of bastardness, but
there's our show title for the week.
Different form of bastardness. Yeah, that's going to be it. As far as that goes, though, it's the quality control on PlayStation Network is starting to slide, and I don't think anybody can doubt that. When you see crap like 5-star, 1,000 top rated, why does anybody even name a game like that?
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically not even really a game. It's just slide puzzles that spew trophies.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, and that's just, the latest example of crap showing up on PlayStation Network. There's, Horse Racing 2016, which is all but broken. Firefighter Simulator, Life of Black Tiger, which Sony advertised on their own channel, was god-awful. It's concerning to see the... I think, you know, it's becoming like Steam. And, you know, Steam has its positives. But, because of the green light thing and just the way people have been gaming it, there's a whole lot of crap on Steam. And it's kind of a minefield now to go through and browse games and see, you know, you have no idea what you're going to get at this point.
Yeah, you almost have to follow a group of curators that match your interests.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you know, you're going to have to fight. Well, not fight with them so much to get refunds on games you don't like or that don't play.
Yeah. So yeah, it's concerning. I haven't lost faith in Sony at this point. I think, you know, they can turn it around and get it back together and become the PlayStation that we actually know and want. But first of all, they have to fire Jim Ryan.
Yep.
Or like put him in some corner office somewhere down in the basement where nobody can see him. and just. To not give him a phone or anything like that.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
Absolute communication blackout.
Yeah. Because anytime he opens his mouth, bad things come out.
Sony gets a black eye.
Yeah. Yeah.
True.
So, yeah. And what else are we going to talk here? Well, I think the biggest surprise was just how well Nintendo has done with the Switch.
Yeah, I mean, they frankly, you know, let's be honest, they were hurting coming off the Wii U.
Yeah.
Like, they haven't had a fiasco like that in, well...
Ever?
In kind of a while. And, you know, when the Switch first debuted, there was a lot of people was like, you know, this is interesting, but... You know, just everybody was really suspicious because, you know, I mean, yeah, they were just coming off the Wii U and people are thinking, you know, what are they going to do now?
Yeah.
Well, what they did is they gave us a Switch with arguably the best Legend of Zelda game in several generations.
I would say since A Link to the Past.
Yeah. And not only that, but it was also one of the best game. Zelda games of several generations with so much content in it that people are still finding new stuff.
Mm-hmm. And more coming.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. On top of that, and of course they also had the bundles that came with it.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah. That definitely helped. It also helped that...
All three units that they shipped.
It also helped that some of the major announcements from some of the major games that were supposed to come out from some of the other companies ended up getting canceled or delayed, which basically kind of gave Nintendo pretty much carte blanche to just come in and dominate.
Yeah. I would really love to see what the attach rate is for Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
Because, I
think it was something like 115% when it first came out. But I'm not even kidding.
It was more than 1:1 because more people had Zelda than Switches.
Yeah.
But it's got to be hanging somewhere around 92-93% at the very least.
Yeah.
Also got to take into account the Wii U game, though.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, well, no, they weren't actually counting that.
They were
counting that separately.
They were going by Switch copies.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's also, we had a debut of a new Nintendo IP, which really does not happen all that often. The last one was Splatoon.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think we're going to see them step that up.
Yeah. We got ARMS, and apparently ARMS is a hit.
Yeah. It looks really good.
Yeah.
People are liking it.
People do like it.
Fighting game community is actually seeming to be getting behind it,
mm-hmm.
which is
even though
strange.
It's not really much of a fighting game.
No, I think it's more the Smash community latching onto it, which might be a decent opportunity to kind of use it as a wedge to break the Smash community off into its own thing.
Yeah. And, you know, we've got also, you know, unlike with the Wii U, third-party developers seem to have a much better attitude towards it.
Yep.
For now, at least.
I think the main thing, especially with third-party developers, is seeing their willingness to work with Nintendo to make something happen.
Yeah.
Case in point, you look at the Rabbids game. Prior to E3, we all trashed the shit out of it.
Yeah, we thought it was a running gag.
So, yeah, I mean, you have games like that where as long as Nintendo is involved in some way, so, you know, you have the Rabbids game, you have the Zelda Oracle games back on the Game Boy Color. Mm-hmm. As long as Nintendo has some sort of like influence, you know, there's a good possibility there. The problem is, do the third parties really want to make the effort, especially with, you know, underpowered technology? That's something that we haven't really seen yet.
And that's really going to depend because, yes, it's underpowered technology, but it is its own thing.
Mm-hmm.
And if developers treat the Switch as its own thing and develop specifically for it, which I'm starting to see, then yes, it could be very well. It could do very well. And it's going to really depend if the Switch just keeps selling. If there's a really big, you know, if the Switch sells 20, 30 million, then yeah, you better believe third-party developers are going to get in on it.
If you build the installed base, they will come.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Considering the fact that, you know, we've got Mario Odyssey that's fixing to come out in a couple months, and that one, and more than likely they're going to make a bundle for it for the holidays.
Yeah.
You're going to see even more get sold.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it could very well happen.
Yeah. One of the other
it can't be just shovelware, though. I mean, you look at the 3DS, where there's a whole lot of good third-party games on there. But then you look at the Wii, and they were just god-awful.
Yeah.
The Wii was swimming in it.
Yeah. Another thing I think that's helping the Switch is it's not really relying too much on gimmicks, which is the, well, the Wii U's downfall, really. It was a gimmick. Secondly, it was confusing.
It was a gimmick that hamstrung the price point, too.
Yeah, hamstrung the price point. But in this case, there's no confusion here. This is not a third Wii.
No.
You know, and I just can't believe I said that.
they ran as far and as fast from that name as they possibly could.
Oh,
yeah.
My God. You know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, don't get us wrong. The Switch does have motion controls, but they've actually been using them for good this time.
Yeah, I mean, the motion controls require you to play in a very specific way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the Skyrim, for instance, with the motion controls, probably works best if you've got the Switch, you know, stuck there on a stand. No, using its kickstand. Not sure that would work very well docked. It might. You never know.
Good. Like, the main thing I want to see is I want to see every possible control scheme actually being used to your tastes. Like, the biggest thing for me, especially with the Wii U, was Star Fox Zero. There was no reason to just totally rely on whatever the gamepad did, because a lot of the course design was excellent. If that game is re-released on the Switch without the bullshit controls, it'll be great.
It should be front and center on the evacuation project.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Star Fox Zero done properly.
Oh, that's
like making it even more confusing. You look at Mario Kart and Smash Brothers on the Wii U, and those let you use any controller you want.
Yeah.
Like, that has to keep being a thing.
Yeah. Well, so does Splatoon. So does ARMS. You know, it's pretty much every single Nintendo property at this point just lets you use whatever control you want to. So if they bring Star Fox Zero out on the Switch, and it doesn't allow that, that would be a very, very big red flag.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But then again, you know, bringing it to the Switch in and of itself kind of necessitates that. Because the platform really is modular in that way. You can't really dictate how people are going to play it.
Well, not just that, but you cannot play on the You cannot play docked and with the screen at the same time.
No.
You cannot do that sort of Wii U gameplay with the Switch. And the entire message of the Switch seems to be play the way you want to play.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which obviously goes against the design of Star Fox Zero, but that's why we need this version so badly.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, we can't have the last Star Fox game, you know, of the generation just languish there. They've got the opportunity to bring it to the Switch. If they don't do that, I would be very surprised.
Yeah. And if they do that, I'm sure you'll be right there on the next Switch allocation.
Oh yeah. Yeah, if they do that, I'll be doing that. One of the things I kind of appreciated with the Switch, Star Fox Zero, it got a lot of flack for, but it was basically the ability to just turn on invincibility. Don't know if any of you guys even knew that was a thing.
I honestly didn't pay that much attention to the game after the whole control thing.
Yeah. Yeah, you could just basically go into the options and turn invincibility on and just play through the game. Which actually might make it playable to most people because, you don't have to really fight with the control so much.
Nope. But,
that may be a workaround of that, you know, is a problem that shouldn't have been there to begin with.
Nope.
Should we take a minute to talk about the Wii U evacuation project?
Yeah, I think it's worth mentioning because it started with Splatoon.
Well,
in a way, because the sequel moved to Switch.
You also say that it started with Zelda.
Yeah,
although that delay and the Switch version, and you know,
yeah,
at the start of development, it was a Wii U exclusive.
Yeah, and then the Switch was announced, Zelda was announced for it.
And Kimishima looked around at the whole Wii U thing and realized everything was on fire.
It's not okay, folks.
Yeah, he's like, oh, we have a lot of good games and no one is playing them. Yeah, let's go ahead and re-release them all.
Yeah. And they started doing that with Mario Kart 8. That came out to very good reviews. Probably one of the best in the series, considering you can actually play it now.
Mm-hmm.
It's got all the DLC. It's got everything from the Wii U version. It just plays better and looks better because of the extra hardware power.
Yeah.
And where else is that going? Well, Splatoon 2 we talked about.
Lego City Undercover was one.
Yeah. That wasn't Nintendo though. That was third party. So, yeah.
It's a very good one.
Yeah. But there's also the possibility that Platinum will be bringing Bayonetta over.
Mm-hmm.
They've also hinted at the Wonderful 101.
Yeah.
Being part of that whole evacuation.
That would be a good one to bring to the Switch, because I don't think that game was really appreciated.
Mm-mm. Mm.
They're talking Xenoblade X, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have to be fitting that one.
Yeah. I will gladly replay that game again on the Switch.
Yeah,
well, that would be a good way to play it on the Switch.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and I think the Switch has kind of defied everybody. It's doing really well for them, and it's
showed Nintendo is still very relevant.
Yeah,
it shows Nintendo. Nintendo can make great systems when they try to get out of their own way.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to see...
I saw this tweet made on February 28th. I'm glad Nintendo's making the Vita 2. A platform with a lot of Japanese support, a bunch of Western indie devs, and no Sony games.
Wow.
Awkward. Except for
I think they've got to get a new Super Mario Brothers collection out on the Switch. Super Mario Maker.
Yes,
that needs to make it to Switch.
You have to be playing it undocked, but for the actual gameplay, anything goes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think the creation could probably be adapted to work with just the controller, so I don't think that would be too difficult to rejigger. So
They gotta make
our 2013 game of the year.
They gotta have Smash make the the jump, I believe.
Yeah, Smash, yeah. I think, is inevitable. Whether it's going to be a port of the Wii U version or a new one remains to be seen.
I think it's too early for a new Smash, because usually they try to get these games to have pretty long legs, and I don't think this is any different.
I would lean towards a port with a new character, considering Sakurai hates himself right now. So
yeah,
yeah.
Put in a new character or two. Call it a day.
Yeah, yeah. Just because the amount of work that goes into those Smash games is just
it's intense.
Yeah,
you got to call all those other companies. It's fucking crazy.
Yeah,
let someone else oversee development of the port, because Sakurai still needs to heal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He purges these games from his soul. There's no question.
Yeah.
But your heart definitely goes out to the guy.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So. So that's the Switch, and I'm optimistic for them, to be honest.
Yeah.
You know, if I know that they've sold more than 2 million already. I'm probably expecting close to 5 by the end of the year. And if that's the pace that they end up going, yeah, this is another Wii that we're looking at here. Hopefully without the abundance of shovelware.
Mm-hmm.
So, let's keep an eye on that. So another thing that this generation brought us is mid-generation console upgrades.
Yeah.
Yay. And I don't, I'm not being facetious there. I think that's actually a good thing.
Yeah.
I support it. We've talked on this show quite a bit about the whole, what I call the TikTok theory of console development moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's perfectly healthy as long as backward compatibility is a thing from here on in, because they're on the x86 architecture. There's no excuse now. You can't cite architectural differences as a reason to hold older games off of systems. I think that's going to be the new norm.
What we're seeing with Sony and Microsoft as far as their upgrades go is kind of a little bit of a different approach to it.
Mm-hmm.
Sony's basically just kind of shrunken down the CPU, and because of the efficiencies, they got more clock out of it, so that helps. And they just basically stuck another half of a GPU on there, so basically doubling it, but in reality, that doesn't really scale to 100%, unfortunately, because of the bus width. So that's a problem. Whereas Microsoft has just decided to go, let's make a gigantic GPU, let's stick that on there, let's do that. And it turns out that's probably a better way to go. What's more interesting, I find, is the marketing of these two systems. Microsoft is basically treating this as a premium Xbox for the early adopter of 4K and, you know, people who want the best and
Latest greatest.
Yeah, the absolute latest greatest. And Sony's marketing of the PS4 is non-existent. And I looked. They're really not pushing this system. I can't understand why. Maybe they realize they kind of goofed a little bit, but I don't get it, especially since the developer support for it is actually starting to take off now. You'd think they'd want to move as many of these as they could.
Yeah.
But, support behind it doesn't seem there from Sony.
Mm-hmm.
It's puzzling.
They get bored really easily.
Yeah. I don't know why, because this is like for...
I'm not sure what spurs it. We saw this with the Vita as well.
Yeah. Maybe they figure the base PS4 is enough. I mean, it is where their biggest market is right now.
They just decide, okay, here's a thing we did. Let's move on.
Yeah, I mean, surely, is there interest being taken by something else? It doesn't make sense.
I'm actually surprised that doesn't seem to have happened to the PlayStation VR yet.
Yeah. No, because that seems to be going strong. And, you know, if you want to get the most out of the PSVR, you really do need a pro.
Yeah.
So you'd think they'd want to promote that. But no, they don't seem to be doing that. My guess is if they're really going to take the pro seriously, it's probably going to start with Gran Turismo Sport.
Yeah.
I have a feeling, you know, Polyphony is, well, they're basically going to get as much as they can out of that system.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably going to be enough of a difference that you'll want a pro to play Gran Turismo Sport on. So,
Polyphony can squeeze the life out of just about any system. I mean, they are hardware wizards.
Yeah, they're hardware wizards, and you give them double the GPU and about 30% more CPU, they're going to use it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And plus, they'll take their time to make sure it's great.
Yeah. So if they're going to start promoting it, I probably would expect to see Gran Turismo Sport PS4 Pro bundles.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind that.
Yeah, that would be a good way to get into it.
Compelling for me.
Yeah. Because I could have bought a Slim, but I bought a Pro instead. So, yeah, that's a thing.
Anyway. Mm-hmm.
So we'll move on to our discussion of the OSs behind these, because you spend a lot of time using these.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know,
it's the first thing you see when you boot up. If you're going online, you're interacting with this. And both of these companies, Microsoft and Sony, have very different approaches to how they handle this.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think they both, and Nintendo for that matter, shit the bed out of the gate.
Mm-hmm.
Out of the gate, yeah.
Nintendo, I agree.
Nintendo, I can't say they shit the bed twice because the Wii U had a pretty solid OS out of the gate. They just took the Wii and they built on it.
Mm-hmm.
But the Switch definitely has a lot of room for improvement.
Yeah, and they seem pretty committed to actually doing those improvements. The Switch just came out too early. That's the real issue. But as far as Microsoft and Sony go, you can kind of tell the different heritages of these systems.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Microsoft is clearly a software company that's now making hardware, and Sony is a hardware company that's forced to make software.
Yep.
Microsoft's was more or less, please don't look at it too closely, or you'll figure out that it's just Windows 10.
Well, initially it was Windows 8, and it's like, we really don't want to mention that because Windows 8 has a really bad reputation.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's 10, and it's working really good, apart from being super freaking slow at times. I don't know if you have this issue, Teresa.
I don't know, it's really weird to navigate for me. I still can't find some shit I want to find.
Yeah, see, that's what it is for me. It's weird to navigate, it's not slow for me. It just, you know, you're looking for something like, oh, god damn it, it's over here. Why do I have to go there? Blah, blah, blah. My TV's not touched. I think that's what I want.
And then while I'm struggling, I'll be like, fucking Xbox. And then it'll Kinect will turn on and turn the voice shit, and I'm like, oh, my god, stop.
Like it's
so why do you have the Kinect attached?
I don't know. Just to give it a reason to be there.
I had it attached, but I moved my TV and I didn't plug it in again. So.
Yeah, mine is just sitting there gathering dust. I might use it again when I start streaming more Xbox One stuff.
Yeah, but when I got my Xbox One, I straight up just threw my Kinect in the trash.
We didn't even get one, obviously, with this one. And unless we find one on the giveaway table downstairs in the condo, we are not getting one. Why?
And even if you do find one, you can't plug it in.
Yeah, it's true. I forgot about that.
So, yeah, it's like, we really don't have much support for Kinect at this point. But one of the things I did want to bring up was just how things are organized and, well, with errors and stuff, because we all run into those, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. On the Xbox, when you get an error, usually you get an error code and you kind of have an idea. It actually tells you what the heck it is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes when you get errors on PS4, it's like, what? Don't know what the hell this is. to be fair, with the past few firmwares, they've actually started getting better about that. When you get an error, there's
codes.
Well, you get codes, but you also get descriptions, and sometimes you get suggestions depending on what the error was. Although you can get into a really weird loop where if you end up in my case, I had PS4 Pro wasn't able to connect to the internet, and then it said check the internet for suggestions. So it brings up a browser and you can't see anything because you can't connect to the internet. I'm not sure they've thought that entirely through. But yeah, there's that. Another thing that kind of bugs me about the PS4 is just, okay, we have folders now, it took a while to get there, still have no way to sort anything.
Yeah.
Apart from manually doing it.
Yeah.
You can't, for instance, you can't say, I want this folder to be right here all the time. It basically will, stuff will move around depending on how you use it.
Yeah.
Which, in theory.
And what's in the drive.
And what's in the drive, that's always going to be at the left, no matter what. Whereas Xbox One kind of does a little bit of that. You can kind of, well, you have your pins, so you can, put stuff where you want it.
And those will automatically shuffle themselves in the order of games that were played?
The pins don't. No. The pins do not. The recently used stuff at the top does. But the pins, you have total control over where those are. What you don't have is folders. So, one up for Sony there.
Forget about divvying things up by genre.
You can't do that, although I've heard that's probably something that is coming. Mm. With the amount of games that they got going on and coming later this year, I'd be very surprised if we don't get some sort of organizational ability on the Xbox One. Because it really needs quality
of life improvements.
Yeah.
Yep.
Along with the backwards compatibility stuff for OG Xbox that's coming soon.
Oh.
Yeah, they kind of stole the show with that, I felt.
Oh, my. How much Project Gotham are we going to stream?
All of the Project Gotham. Yeah, I have my discs. I have to get my discs out.
I've got them right here. I'm ready to go.
Yeah. It's going to be weird because I bought all of the DLC for PGR, so I'm wondering if I'll actually have access to that again. Because apparently, if I go to my legacy account page, I can see them. So
interesting.
They still have records of them. So
that's pretty cool, actually.
Yeah.
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 It means they actually care about our legacy purchases.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's data to them, so it's like, there's no real reason to get rid of this.
Yeah.
So we have those records. I don't see why we can't bring them back.
Well, other companies might be like, purge all of the things. We don't need it anymore.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what Sony kind of ended up doing. That's why we have Crash Insane Trilogy, because couldn't find any of the original sources.
Yep.
So, both consoles
I can't remember where I read this, but there was a report recently that talked about how a lot of game developers for a lot of years just didn't place any value on source code.
Yeah.
As far as holding on to it, archiving it. They'd release the game and then dump it.
Yeah. Oh, God.
And so there are a lot of games that only exist in ROM form now because all of that source code has just been lost to the ether. They didn't need it anymore. They got rid of the code and moved on to the next thing.
Oh, yeah. God.
Well, StarCraft Remastered is kind of an example of that. Blizzard didn't, chuck the code or anything like that. They just lost it.
Mm-hmm.
Hard drive crashes, stuff like that. So they basically had to use the builds that they had and then just eyeball everything and try to upscale everything and redo all the art, do all of that and try to make
it. At that point, they might as well just redevelop it from scratch.
Except for one thing, they wanted to retain compatibility with the old one.
Mm-hmm.
So they had to keep all of those frame timings identical.
Oh my God.
Yep.
No, no, no.
And they did it. That's all of the work they went through. There was that Redditor who found a gold disc with the StarCraft source code into them. So it's like, thank you. That makes our job much easier now. So,
No wonder they were so happy to see it.
Yeah, it's like this helps immensely. So, and granted, it was kind of out of date, but still, it's a base that they can work from. So they needed that. So source code is important, folks, and so is the OS that runs your stuff. So take care of it.
Yep.
Oh, yes.
In the 8-bit, 16-bit days, pretty much all that source code seems to be gone now.
Yeah.
It's amazing how people just coded by the seat of their pants back in the day.
Oh, they did.
Mm-hmm. That was assembly, wasn't it? Good God.
Most of it was, yeah. There was no real high level language development on consoles till I think. The dev kits for the SNES were a little bit better, but it was still pretty tough to develop for.
That's crazy.
I would hold on to that like my life's work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Hopefully. I'm pretty sure some of those developers have floppy disks with some of those source code files on there somewhere. It's just a matter of finding them and figuring out a way to actually read them again.
Mm-hmm.
Because do you know how to read an X68000 floppy disk? Because that may be a problem.
Yeah. With an emulator?
That's probably the only real way to do it. Yeah. So that kind of brings us to the future, where we're going, and apparently, according to Michael Pachter, we'll probably see a PlayStation 5 for 2019.
I think he's a year or two ahead of schedule on that, but...
Well, if it's late 2019, that would be 5 years.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that would also be only 2016, 2017, 3 years after the PS4 Pro.
I think they got to put that out to holiday 2020 or even 2021.
Mm-hmm.
I think based on what happened between the PS4 Pro and the Xbox One X, I think Sony has one more stopgap platform in them before tick.
I don't think so.
Mm-mm.
No. The way I see this going is let's say they're really developing the PlayStation 5 at the moment, and I don't doubt that they are.
Yeah.
What I see happening is the base PS4 goes away, and the Pro becomes the base.
Okay.
Mm.
Yeah. I mean, the Pro gets a price drop, and then that becomes your PS4.
I can see that happening. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At that point, you got the PS4 Pro and the PS5, and then a PS5 Pro maybe comes out in 3 years after that.
Yeah,
and you just keep rolling, so that your base is always at least the higher of the tiers, higher or lower, depending if you're.
It would be easy to convince me to get a PS5 over a PS4 Pro, but that's me.
Yeah, yeah, well, I mean, if the PS4 Pro is $200 and the PS5 is $400 or $500, there's a value proposition there, too.
And if the PS5 has absolute backward compatibility with the PS4, which, again, they have no excuse not to do at this point, that would make it an easy sell for me.
Yeah. Mm. Which kind of brings us to Digital Foundry's speculation that the next generation PS5 and Xbox platforms will probably be based on AMD Ryzen, which is kind of the only real thing they could base it on at this point. Intel doesn't want to have
in other news, the sun will rise tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they're basically saying here is that next generation consoles will really actually require a next generation CPU. Gee, that's not entirely unheard of. This video goes into quite a bit of depth, basically showing where the limitations are. They use Assassin's Creed Unity as a very good example. In that Ubisoft was developing for a console that didn't materialize. Yeah. They were, Ubisoft was basically targeting systems that were a lot more powerful because they believed that the 8-core CPUs that they got would be enough. But when they actually got their hands on it, they needed about 30% more to actually keep a stable frame rate. Mm. And that was a stable 30. So, yeah, that's that would be a problem.
Just a bit.
Yeah. But yeah, so Ryzen as the next generation. It'll be interesting because both the Xbox and PlayStation architectures are more or less the same at the moment. They're both kind of using the same parts, they're just using them differently.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if that differentiation is going to continue or if they just end up homogenizing. I suspect that because of the way that the PlayStation has architected itself with its strange uses of connectors in some areas, I don't see any reason that you should be going from USB to from SATA to USB and then back again, but that's what they are actually doing.
Yeah.
Huh.
Not on the PS4 Pro though, just on the base. They don't understand that. But
I suppose third parties might strong arm them into getting on the same page.
They might. The problem is, if they do want to maintain that backwards compatibility, the architecture has to be similar. Have to be, bigger and more powerful, but if they want to retain compatibility with PS4 Pro and stuff, they're probably going to have to use that split GPU architecture as well. Yeah. So, yeah, it's going to be weird. Of course, they could just decide to, do some software hacks to actually make that work on the architecture that they do go to. But, we'll have to wait and see because Sony, they do their own thing, apparently.
Fire Jim Ryan.
Yes. Just fire Jim Ryan.
From a cannon.
Yeah. He's not really relevant to this entire discussion, but what the hell, just fire him anyway.
Well, the whole backward compatibility thing.
Yeah.
They just have to purge that sentiment from
It
would be a cleansing.
Yeah. Well, if they release a PS5 that's not backwards compatible to PS4, then people will riot.
Then fuck them dead.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a non-starter, because there's absolutely no reason that they couldn't do it.
Right.
Yeah. Unless they decide to go back to cell architecture for some reason. Yeah, that's not happening.
That would be grounds to riot.
Yeah, mm-hmm. that's not going to happen. So, yeah. But yeah, anybody have any other final thoughts from the future, the past, or whatever before we wrap up today?
Remember how cool Sony was when they let us, lend games to each other?
Oh, yeah. Well, you can still do that.
Well, compared to Sony now, it's like, oh!
More or less saves the generation.
Hmm. What was that, Pat?
I said, that sort of burn to Microsoft helped save the generation.
Yeah.
Things could have gone really badly if they hadn't set Microsoft on fire over the original Xbox One concept.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, and it looks like that was kind of a last-minute decision, too.
Yeah.
I'm glad they made it at the time, but apparently if people hadn't basically rioted as far as Microsoft's approach to the next generation was, Sony probably would have done the same thing.
Yeah.
And that would have been the world that we would have lived in.
That's why it's important for the gaming public to keep the hardware manufacturers honest.
Yeah.
See, kids, riots do solve problems.
As long as they're nonviolent.
I mean, if it wasn't a consumer riot, I'm sure GameStop would have, rioted hella hard, and it would have been ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, they would have hated that, because that basically would have cut them out of the second-hand market.
Yeah,
totally. They wouldn't have been able to... Basically, the game just would have been... install, and then it's attached to your account, and then you can't do anything with that disc anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So, But no, that's not the world we live in now. You can still go and buy games. You can still hand them off to your friends. And I suspect that will continue for at least a good 3 years. Perhaps, maybe a little longer. Mm-hmm. At least for now.
This is a good generation. It's a good time to be a gamer.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. With the amount of... I don't know. I'm not going to say, like, you know, the AAA stuff, you know, because I do like a good AAA game here and there. I like to play those. AAA is going to AAA, but we're starting to see the cracks in that market.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's... you know, it takes a long time to develop those games, and return may not be what they expect.
I think I said in one of the earliest episodes of this show that AAA will eat itself, mm-hmm. and we're seeing it.
Yeah.
We're seeing it now.
We're also starting to see something which is a little strange, in that some of the worst companies, like EA, mm-hmm. Actually are trying to do stuff that's a bit more consumer-focused. Or consumer-friendly, which I would have never expected.
Surrounding themselves with people who remember why they got into this.
Mm-hmm. Well, EA started to realize their reputation.
Yeah.
And it was starting to hurt their bottom line. So. Yeah.
But you look at Battlefront 2, and with no season pass thing, yes, there will be microtransactions. We know EA is going to do that. But the microtransactions are going to be, they're going to be cosmetic. A lot of people don't like those, but I feel if a game is giving you content for free, mm-hmm. that's basically required to play the game for a long period of time, because I imagine they want to keep Battlefront 2 running as long as they can, keep people engaged, and there are going to be people who want to give those developers more money to support them.
But it's not just Battlefront 2, it's Anthem, it's Madden, it's Need for Speed. All these mm-hmm. developers are genuinely passionate about what they're making. They don't come off like overworked schlubs with people cracking whips over them.
Yeah.
Like as was EA's reputation for years and years.
Hmm.
Yeah, there definitely is some, you know, genuine game making over there, and
there's good energy going on over there right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And granted, they may not be making the kind of games that we want, but
they're making the kind of games that they want, and that's how it should be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
They're excited about what they're doing, and it is showing.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what a game developer should be.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Cooked to taste.
Looking forward to that Madden story mode, though.
Well, yeah. Again, it's not for me. But it's what they want to make, and more power to them. Fuck the focus groups, fuck the analysts, get all that shit out of there, make what you want to make, and, you know, good things will come.
Yeah. Anthem is what's on my radar.
Yes.
Right now, because I've said it before, but fuck it, I'm going to go ahead and just list it all again. It's being done by, basically, BioWare's A-Team.
Yeah.
You know, Aspect Andromeda was done by their B team. This is being done by all the people that worked on the original Mass Effect trilogy, made their way over to this team. You know.
Right, so, now I'm not a known player of a lot of BioWare stuff, so you're saying they've basically got a kind of platinum thing going on?
Basically, yeah. This was the game that Casey Hudson was working on before he went over to work at Microsoft. They got Drew Karpyshyn, the original writer of a lot of BioWare's classics, including the first two Mass Effect games, working on this. They got a lot of the old programmers, a lot of the old artists. All of them sort of made their way over to this big project. And we already saw what they showed us at E3, and that in and of itself floored me. Seeing that, and including all of what I just mentioned, basically has put Anthem on one of my most anticipated.
Yeah.
One
for me, it's A Way Out, that new game from Haze Light, the guys who did Brothers Tale of Two Sons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that game was awesome, too.
Yeah, hope you have somebody to play it with.
Maybe I'll just, hey, Chris, let's play this.
Yeah, because that's a co-op only game, so that's gonna be weird. Well, you have a brother, so you can just rope him to play in with you. It's more of a couch co-op game, so that's gonna be weird. But it looks great, though. That's one of those unexpected surprises from EA, and hats off to Yosef for being incredibly enthusiastic. So
like Jim Ryan.
Unlike Jim Ryan, who basically hates everybody.
Yeah. I think we got a show, man.
I'd say so.
I was late.
Yeah, it's all right. Better luck next week, I suppose.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is your first time listening to the DayZero update. Welcome. Also, if you're not subscribed to the show, go ahead and do that on. You can do that on Apple Podcasts. I can't say iTunes anymore, even though it's in iTunes, but it's Apple Podcasts.
Yeah.
You can do that also on TuneIn, Google Play, or your favorite RSS reader. So we're plenty of ways to subscribe to the DayZero update.
Your toaster oven. If you look Windows really media, closely at the shower head player. Bathroom. We're probably on there too.
If it runs Linux, you can probably get us on it. So there you go.
DayZero update.
There, I'm sure you probably set off at least one Alexa at this point. With that, I'm Filippo D'Onofrio.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
I'm Genera Victoria.
And I'm Teresa Samus.
And we'll see you next week.
From a cannon.